Okay, so we've been studying men of God, and we've been going through the Old Testament, and we got to the place of the Babylonian captivity of Israel or Judah, actually, and Benjamin, and we looked at some of the prophets that were alive at that time, Daniel, Habakkuk. And then we did Ezra and Nehemiah, and now we're going to look at Esther. Esther, actually, there's no man of God mentioned in this book, but it is a great record of two people who stood for God, Esther and her cousin Mordecai. But you'll see that they walked with God. This book and time precedes Ezra and Nehemiah, although we already looked at those guys, but this was actually came before, maybe a little bit after Daniel. There is speculation that Mordecai is the writer, and if true, then we would consider him a prophet and a man of God, right? But we don't know that because it doesn't tell us. Sometimes people get into arguments about who wrote books in the Bible, like Hebrews. Everybody says Paul wrote Hebrews, but it doesn't say that. So in reality, we can't say that because the Bible doesn't say that, or God's word doesn't say that. So whether Paul wrote it, it doesn't matter. People have argued over the Gospel of John and who actually wrote it. Again, it doesn't tell us who wrote it, so it doesn't really matter. If God wanted us to know, he would tell us, right? So that's the important thing. But we do believe that it's God's word and it was God breathed, that he gave it to a man of God to write down. So much for Mordecai being the writer. There's no use or mention of the word God or Jehovah in Esther in the Hebrew. So that's an interesting part of this part of the Word of God. There's no mention of God or Jehovah. However, in the Septuagint, the Greek Old Testament, there are added 107 extra verses which reference to God by name. So, first thing we're going to do is I'm going to read the first section of the Septuagint. So you ready? And you can't really follow along because it's not in the Hebrew. This is extra. No extra charge, though. In the second year of the reign of Artaxerxes, the great king, on the first day of Nisan, Mardochias, that's Mordecai, the son of Jairus, the son of Simeas, the son of Sisias of the tribe of Benjamin, a Jew dwelling in the city of Susa, a great man serving in the king's palace, saw a vision. Now he was of the captivity which Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried captive from Jerusalem with Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. So I think that part of that is actually in, a little bit of it is in the Hebrew, but then it goes on. And this was his dream. So, and up above it said a vision. Here it calls it a dream. Behold, voices and a noise, thunders and earthquakes, tumult upon the earth. And behold, two great serpents came forth, both ready for a conflict. And there came from them a great voice. And by their voice, every nation was prepared for battle, even to fight against the nation of the just. And behold, a day of darkness and blackness, tribulation and anguish, affliction and great tumult upon the earth. And all the righteous nation was troubled, fearing their own afflictions. Of course, the righteous nation would refer to what? Israel, or Judah in this case. And they prepared to die and cried to God. And from their cry there came, as it were, a great river from a little fountain, even much water, and light, and the sun arose, and lowly were exalted and devoured of the honorable. And Mardochias, who had seen this vision and what God designed to do, having awoke, kept it in his heart and desired by all means to interpret it, even till night. And Mardochias rested quiet in the palace with Gabatha and Tara, the king's two chamberlains, eunuchs who guarded the palace. And he heard their reasonings and searched out their plans and learnt that they were preparing to lay hands on the king Artaxerxes. And he informed the king concerning them. And the king examined the two chamberlains, and they confessed and were executed. And the king wrote these things for a memorial. Also, Mardochias wrote concerning these matters, and the king commanded Mardochias to attend in the palace and gave him gifts for service. And Ammon, the son of Amadathus, the Bergogian, was honorable in the sight of the king, and he endeavored to hurt Mardochias and his people because of the two chamberlains of the king. So that's what it has in the that part. So now we get to the Bible of King James. In chapter 1, verse 1, now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, this is Ahasuerus, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, and 127 provinces. Okay, the word Ahasuerus in the Greek is Artaxerxes. So that's where that comes from, right? In the Greek, we read Artaxerxes. In the Hebrew, it's Ahasuerus, but it means the great king or the great ruler or the great one or something like that. And then it says that in those days when the king Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan, the palace, and in the Greek it said Susa, but it's Shushan in the Hebrew or Aramaic. In the third year of his reign, he made a great feast unto all the princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, and the nobles and princes and princes of the provinces being before him. So, Shushan was the capital of the Persian Empire, which replaced Babylon. Remember, originally Nebuchadnezzar had conquered these people and taken them out of captivity. And then the Persians came in and conquered the Babylonians, and then their capital was Shushan. When he showed, verse 4, when he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the honor of his excellent majesty, many days, even 180 days, which is 180 days, which would be about 6 months, right? So that's quite a party, a 6 month party. And when these days were expired, the king made a feast unto all the people that were present in Shushan, the palace, both unto great and small, 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. So after he did all that, then he had a party for, a smaller get together for, the special people. The first one was a big party for all these guys from 127 provinces. And then he got special guys. He had another special 7 day little celebration. Verse 6, where were white, green, blue hangings fastened with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rings, pillars of marble, the beds were of gold and silver upon the pavement of red, white, and blue, and white and black marble. Wow. Must have been quite a sight, huh?
Nice.
Pretty fancy. And they gave them drink in the vessels of gold, the vessels being diverse, one from another, means every vessel, every glass, every chalice was different. They were diverse. They were all, it wasn't just, they bought a set of glasses or something. These were special made gold drinking vessels. And royal wine in abundance according to the state of the king. And I'm sure the king had the very best wine of any wine. And their drinking was according to the law. None did compel, for so the king had appointed to all the officers of his house that they should do according to every man's pleasure. In other words, he didn't command them that they had to drink so much or do this or do that. He just, everybody could do what they wanted. And Vashti, also Vashti the queen, made a feast for the women in the royal house, which belonged to the king, Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcas, the seven chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus, the king, to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king with a crown royal to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look on. So she must have been quite a doll, right? Good looking. And he wanted to show her off. But the queen, Vashti, refused to come to the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. So he wasn't happy about this. You can imagine. Then the king said to the wise men, which knew the times, for so was the king's manner toward all that he knew, law and judgment. And the next unto him was Karshina, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marsena, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media, which saw the king's face and which sat at the first in the kingdom. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to the law, because she hath not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? And Memucan, what a great name. Hey, they probably called him Mimi. Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Vashti the queen hath not done wrong in the to the king only, but also to all the princes and to all the people that are on the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes, when it shall be reported, the king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought before him, but she came not. So what are they saying? They're saying this is going to cause a revolt among the women, and they're not going to obey their husbands, and they're going to,
Cause trouble.
and everything's going to fall apart here. The kingdom's going to collapse. Likewise shall the ladies of Persia and Media say this day unto all the king's princes, which have heard of the deed of the queen, thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. It's going to cause contempt and wrath for the authority of the men. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. So they're saying, well, because she did this, she's history. She's getting kicked out. Let's find a new queen, and she can take the place of this. Although she's pretty, she doesn't have the right attitude, as they would say in Philadelphia, attitude. So, when the king's decree, which he shall make, shall be published throughout all his empire, for it is great, all the wives shall give to their husbands honor, both great and small. And the saying pleased the king and the princes, and the king did according to the word of Memucan. For he sent letters unto all the king's provinces, into every province according to the writing thereof, and to every people after their language, and every man should bear rule in his own house, and that it should be published according to the language of every people. Now, it says here that he was over 127 provinces, and that's, all these different places that he had conquered, and there were many different, places in the region. It's pretty big if you would look at, a map of the Middle East, and there were a lot of different little languages. It wasn't just, Persian. I forget what Persian's called, the language they speak in Iran today. But there was Aramaic, there was Hebrew, there was, some others, and Persian. So, and then you get down to like Egypt and different places, like they all have different languages. So he published it, had to publish it in all the different languages, right? So everybody understood. So, chapter two. So we know that they're going to be looking for another queen, right?
Yes.
So after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus, and that's not his name, that's just a title. And I can't remember what the name of the king was. I think it's Astyages or something like that, if you look in history books. After these things, when the wrath of the king Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, let there be fair young maidens sought, young virgins sought for the king. And let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather together all the fair young virgins unto Shushan, the palace, to the house of the women, unto the custody of Hege, the king's chamberlain, keeper of the women, and let their things for purification be given to them. So they're going throughout the whole empire, and they're going to find all the nice looking, best virgins, the cream of the crop, and they're going to bring them to this place where this guy who's in charge of the women of the royal household, the concubines and the wives, he's going to check them out, and they're going to be put aside, and they're going to have to spend time purifying themselves. It's not like, okay, we find a girl, we do a quick ceremony, and that's it. This is a whole big deal.
Right.
And let the maiden which pleaseth the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the king and the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So there's going to be one of these young virgins is going to be the queen, and she's going to replace Vashti. Now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai. Remember, he was the guy that had the vision in the beginning, a different name in Greek as usual. The son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. So he was of the tribe of Benjamin, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, or Jehoiakim, is who it really is, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. So he's been there, and he's been through the reign of, Nebuchadnezzar, and he's at the place now where he serves this other king. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther. So her name was Hadassah, but she's called Esther. His uncle's daughter, for she had neither father or mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. So they're actually cousins, but he's older. And he takes her and raises her as his daughter. And it came to pass when the king's commandment and his decrees were heard, and when many maidens were gathered together in Shushan, the palace, to the custody of Hege, that Esther was brought also unto the king's house, to the custody of Hege, keeper of the women. And the maiden pleased him, and he obtained kindness of him. She obtained kindness of him. And he speedily gave her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens which were meet to be given her out of the king's house, and he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women. So this woman is Mordecai's cousin, and he's raised her as his own child, and she comes to this house of women, and this guy that's running the deal likes her above everybody else, so he gives her seven maidens to wait on her and take care of her, and he gives her a special place in the house. So this is kind of like amazing, right? I mean, he's really doing stuff. Verse 10. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it, meaning she didn't tell anybody that she was a Jew. She didn't tell anybody she was one of the children of captivity, right? Because Mordecai told her not to, and she was obedient. And Mordecai walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. And when every maid's turn was come to go into King Ahasuerus, after that she had been 12 months, according to the manner of women, for so were the days of purification accomplished, to wit, or to know, 6 months with oil of myrrh, and 6 months with sweet odors, and with other things for the purifying of the women. It's quite a ordeal. Mm-hmm. 6 months with an oil, and then 6 months with this other stuff. So they were considered pure so that they could go before the king. A whole year to prepare. I'm sure there was other things, like, you know, they had to learn a little bit about the protocol of the court and, you know, when they were allowed to do this, when they were allowed to do that, you know. But it was very specific. Then thus came every maiden unto the king. Whatsoever she desired was given her to go with her out of the house of the women unto the king's house. So, you know, and then they had an order and they took turns and they went in to see the king. And in the evening she went, on the morrow she returned into the second house of women to the custody of Shashgas, the king's chamberlain, which kept the concubines. She came in unto the king no more, except the king delighted in her, and that she were called by name. So, is that me or you?
It's me.
Okay. So anyway, so, you know, they're going through the pecking order here. These women are going in and they see him. And then if they're not accepted, then they go to this other place and they're going to be concubines. Now, when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the woman, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all of them that looked upon her. Meaning, she was beautiful, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And everybody said, wow, she's hot. So Esther was taken unto the king, Ahasuerus, into his house royal, in the 10th month, which is the month Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women. And she obtained grace and favor in the sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. This is like a rags to riches story, right? You know, it's almost like a fairy tale, except it's true. That's the difference. Then the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, even Esther's feast. And he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king. And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther did the commandment of Mordecai like as when she was brought up with him. So, you know what, she was obedient and she honored him as a father, like a parent. You know, the Ten Commandments say honor your parents, right? Your father and mother. Well, she honored Mordecai like a father. She obeyed him. She did what he said. So she got blessed because she listened. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, and this is kind of what it talked about in the beginning of the Greek that we read, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king, and the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. In other words, she came and told him. And when inquisition was made of the matter, you mean, you know, they investigated. When they made an investigation of this, you know, situation, it was found out. It was uncovered. It was laid open. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it is written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. So, essentially, Mordecai And Esther saved the life of the king. So now we go to chapter 3. Now, this is kind of interesting. After these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. Wow. Haman, an Agagite. That means he was a descendant of the Amalekite kings. You don't remember about the Amalekites? Hold your place here and go to 1 Samuel 15. First Samuel 15. We'll begin in verse 1. Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Saul is a great man of God, right? A prophet, a priest. And he anoints Saul to be the first king over Israel. Now therefore, hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way, and when he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. And Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And Saul said unto the Kenites, go and depart, get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For he showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until thou comest to Shur, that is over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and of the fatlings, and of the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but every thing that was vile and refuse, they destroyed utterly. So he didn't exactly obey, did he?
No.
So let's go to verse 32. Verse 32. Then said Samuel, bring ye hither to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came unto him because, you know, Samuel came, he met Saul. He said, what's going on here? And Saul said, well, I did everything you did. And he said, well, how come I hear the sheep? And I see these things, and where's the king? He says, bring me hither Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came unto him delicately. And Agag said, surely the bitterness of death is past. You know, okay, the battle's over. Surely we can lay down arms and be buddies. And Samuel said, as thy sword hath made women childless, so shall thy mother be childless among women. And Samuel hewed Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. Then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul, and Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord repented that he had made Saul king over Israel. So that's the Amalekites. And then let's go to Exodus chapter 17. And we'll see why God told them to wipe out the Amalekites. Exodus 17. Verse 8. Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go and fight with Amalek tomorrow. I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill, and it came to pass when Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed, and when he went let his hand down, Amalek prevailed. And Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on one side, the other on the other, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun, and Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword, meaning he defeated them. And they ran away. They didn't defeat them totally, or they didn't totally wipe them out, but they got them pretty good. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book, and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out of remembrance of Amalek from under this heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi, which is Jehovah, my banner. Okay. For he said, because the Lord has sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Because Amalek had attempted to hinder Israel from going into the promised land. They said, just let us pass. Give us some water and let us pass. And Amalek said, no. You know, the Amalekites refused to let him go. And then they wanted to attack Israel. And so that was the problem. So that's why, you know, we're supposed to get rid of them. And it says that it would be generation to generation until they were wiped out from out of remembrance. So that's this guy Haman is a descendant of the Amalekite kings. Agagite. Verse 2 of back to Esther, chapter 3. So that's what that's all about. Verse 2. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. So this appears to be a rebellious move by Mordecai. The word for bowed is a word that is used of bowing to idols, different from the word when it refers to bowing to a king. Okay? So this guy was an idol worshiper. This word is used in 1 Kings 19:18. If you want to look at that sometime. But anyway, we go on. So Mordecai doesn't battle him. So what do you think this did to Haman? Made him mad, right? This guy's not giving him due reverence. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai, wherefore Haman sought to destroy all of the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. Now, he doesn't know that the queen is one of those people, right? Because she didn't tell anybody. In the first month, that is the month Nisan, in the 12th year of the king of Ahasuerus, so this is 12th year. 7th year was when she became queen, I believe, right? Didn't we just read that?
Yeah.
They cast Pur, that is the lot, before Haman from day to day and from month to month to the 12th month, that is the month of Adar. Okay, to cast Pur means they were casting lots. You know, remember the Roman soldiers cast lots to see who would get the robe of Jesus Christ when he hung on the cross. They did. That was the thing they did in the Middle East. Anyway, verse 8. And Haman said unto the king Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all the people, neither keep they the king's laws, therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. So he wants to wipe out all the Jews. Now, when they did this casting of the lots, part of it is they were looking for, or the prognosticators or the false prophets, they would do this to figure out the right time to do something. They were looking for a time when the gods would bless their effort to wipe out the Jews. So hold your place here and go to Isaiah 47. There's a reference to this. 47:13. It says, thou art, verse 13, 47, thou art wearied in the multitude of thy counsels. Let now the astrologers and the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators, stand up and save thee from these things that shall come to pass upon thee. See, this is just, give you a reference. This is what they did. If any of you are familiar with astrology, right? They follow the stars. They have these signs, and they look and they say, "Well, this sign is crossing with this sign, and so this is an age of prosperity, or this is an age of, problems, or this is a good time to make an investment, or this is a good, all that kind of stuff." Has nothing to do with God, but it has to do with these people making up stuff about the stars and the movement of the stars. This was a big deal. Remember the wise men. You can go back to Esther. The wise men, they were Zoroastrians, right? Zoroastria was a philosopher, supposedly wise man of Persia, and he started a movement. Well, later on during this period, Zoroastrians split up. One part followed astrology. The other half, apparently, that we know, Daniel taught about the prophecies and the signs of the coming Messiah. That's why the wise men knew to come at the time of the birth of Jesus Christ, which you can read in the book of
Luke. Yeah.
which one?
Which book is
The Promised Seed, isn't it?
Well, not yet.
In Promised Seed, he talks about that. So anyway, so that's what happened. They were casting lots, and Haman says, "Well, we're going to wipe out the Jews," and they're looking for the right time according to the stars and the signs to see when they should do it. So verse 9 says, if it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have charge of the business to bring it to the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jew's enemy. And the king said unto Haman, the silver is given thee, the people also, to do with them as it seem good to thee. So he gives him a signet ring so he can make an official decree to have this done, and he's going to pay people to wipe out the Jews. And the king is helping him unknowingly. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and they were written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants and to the governors that were over every province and to the rulers of every people of every province according to the writing thereof, to every people after their language in the name of King Ahasuerus, was it written and sealed with the king's ring, right? And you know what they did? They would write the proclamation, make copies, and then they would drip hot wax on it and they'd seal it with the ring, right? Mm-hmm. So I was as good as a commandment from the king. So they did it. And the letters were sent by posts, which means messengers. They didn't have a post office system, but they sent messengers unto all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children, and women in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, to take the spoil of them for a prey. So it's pretty specific in the time and the place and what they would do over every province of the kingdom, meaning even in, if there were any left in Israel, because that was part of the empire, right? Mm-hmm. All the way through, 127 provinces everywhere. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given to every province was published unto all the people that they should be ready against that day. The post went out being hastened by the king's commandment, and the decree was given in Shushan, the palace, and the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city Shushan was perplexed. Okay, now we know the history or the plan of redemption was God promised a Messiah, right? Way back in Genesis 3:15, he gave the first promise. And then throughout the Old Testament, the prophets and all those guys, they promised that Messiah coming. And many of them were types of the promised Messiah. So, who was against the coming of that Messiah? The devil, right? What's the devil's job description?
Steal,
kill, and destroy. And they're trying to steal, kill, and destroy all the Jews.
Yep.
And if they kill the Jews, they cut off that line. God had promised it to Abraham. It would be of his seed. And then he promised it to David and the tribe of Judah. And Benjamin were the two tribes that were left intact that were there at that time. And so this is an attempt by the devil to cut off the line of the Messiah so that he could never come. That's what it's really all about. That's what this is all about. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry. What does that mean? It means he was showing his humility, his consternation, his, you know, he's not happy about this at all because it's his people and he knows that they're going to be killed. And and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. You know, they put sackcloth like a burlap thing on and they would be in ashes. If you read Job, that's what he did. And in every province whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, it was great mourning among the Jews and fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay sick in sackcloth and ashes. They were in great fear and they were in great sadness and they were going to God. So Esther's maid and her chamberlains came and told it to her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai and to take away a sackcloth from him, but he received it not. In other words, he wouldn't receive it. Then called Esther for Hadak, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatak went forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city and was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him and of the sum of the money of Haman had promised to pay the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. So she gets the full lowdown. And he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther and to declare unto her and to charge her that she should go unto the king to make application unto him and to make request before him for her people. And Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again, Esther spake to Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. All the king's servants and people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out a golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days. So she sends back a message. Mordecai says, Esther, you got to go to the king on my behalf and you got to tell him what's going on. And she writes back and says, here's the deal. I have not been called to see the king in 30 days. And if I go in without being called, I will be put to death unless he puts the golden scepter out and says, no problem. That's a pretty heavy thing right there. She's going to have to take a chance. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. He says, well, they're going to find out you're a Jew and you're going to die too, probably. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade them return to Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present at Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night and day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. Mm-hmm. She's pretty brave. Mm-hmm. You know, she's pretty brave. She says, well, if I'm going to go, if I die, I die. Mm-hmm. Pretty wild. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. So her heart was, you know, she would do the best she could, and if she perishes, she perishes. Chapter 5. We're going to do chapter 5, and then we'll stop there. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. And it was so that when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. So that's a pretty good deal. He saw her. And he said, okay, she found favor. She found grace in his sight. And he extended the golden scepter, meaning, okay, you can come see me. You're not going to die. Then the king said unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? And what is thy request? It shall be given thee to half of the kingdom. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's not exactly what it means, but what it means is, you know, I'm going to take care of you. What's going on? And Esther answered, it seemed good unto the king. Let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. Then the king said, cause Haman to make haste that he may do as Esther hath said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther, what at the banquet of wine? What is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? Even to half the kingdom it shall be performed. Woohoo. That's pretty good. He really loved her. Then answered Esther, verse 7, and said, my petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do to tomorrow as the king has said. Then went Haman forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood up not, and he stood not up, nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Because again, you know, everybody bowed down to Haman except Mordecai. And so it made him angry. Nevertheless, Haman refrained from himself. And when he came home, he went, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of the children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and the servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther, the queen, he doesn't know she's a Jew or that she's related to Mordecai. It's great, isn't it? He says, Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther, the queen, did not let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself, and tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. I am special because I'm invited back with the queen, king, to be in the queen's banquet. I'm the only other guy. Man, I'm so blessed. That's great.
That's what you think.
Yet all this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting in the king's gate. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high. That would be 75 feet. Right? Something like that. And tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be built or be made. And we're going to stop there. We're going to run out of time. So, you know, it's like a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You have to come back next week for the second part to see what happens.
That's a long ride.
Oh, JJ. He says it's a long ride.
Come back next week.
Well, you know, or you can tune in. He comes from Arkansas. Okay, well, God bless you all. It's a pretty exciting story. You can see God working in this, and you can see how he worked in the lives of Mordecai and Esther. We can't say 100% that they had the Spirit of God. It doesn't tell us that, but it sure seems like it. But they sure saved the line of the Messiah so that he could come. Because if this doesn't work out, that line is going to be cut off. So we'll end there.